Hello, I'm Tamsin Broster, and you've tuned in to the Undiet Your Menopause podcast. This is your go-to space for liberating yourself from diet culture, so you can stop shrinking to fit in and take back your power as you navigate your menopause journey. Hey, welcome back to the Undiet Your Menopause podcast. It's very good to have you back with me this week. I'm going to be talking about inner critic, self-confidence, and how we can get more of it by understanding why we don't have it in the first place, which sounds confusing, but stick with me. The reason this is on my mind this week is because I was invited to speak at an in-person networking event, an event that was just for women in business. And I know the struggles and I know how that feels. Whether you're in a career, whether you're running your own business, I know the inner critic and the self-confidence that falls off a cliff during this time, especially when you're in perimenopause. And typically you'll find me networking during the day, so this was a little bit different for me. It was the first evening event I've been to for a while, and the cocktails were so tempting, but I was driving. So I had a 0% cocktail, which actually was so good. I think this is kind of like my new thing. I think I'm in my non-alcoholic era, maybe, because I didn't want the alcohol in the drink. I actually just wanted to join in the fun. And I love how pretty cocktails look when you post them on Instagram and stuff. I do love that aesthetic, but I was not, obviously I was driving anyway, so just wasn't going to be the one for me drinking that night. So it was really nice to be able to join in and have some fun, network with some people. It was incredible. And being asked to do a talk is always an honor. And I wanted to talk about confidence, but what I wanted to do was really focus on not just how we get more confidence, but the reason we don't feel confident in the first place. What is it about our perimenopause journey? And, you know, most of these women that I was in the room with were running their own businesses, entrepreneurs, just like me. And they are typical of the people that I work with, who are going through perimenopause, who are later on in life and doubting themselves and finding themselves up against their inner critic, or just less confident than they used to be. They can't necessarily put their finger on it, but they know that they used to be more confident and they wish they could get that confidence back from when they were younger. And it's just really interesting to chat with people who are going through this as well and help them to see that there are other ways of gaining that confidence. And it's really important to me to go through this and explain this to my clients and show them where they get the message that they need to be small and pleasing and show up in a certain way in this world when they are socialized as a woman. And I think this is more important than how we get more confidence. If we don't do this groundwork and we don't understand why and how and when all of this stuff has happened to us, it can often go missed, and we may never actually feel more confident, because you can't just embody that without doing some of the work to understand why you feel like that in the first place. And this is a topic really, really close to home, okay? Because I spent 20 years in the civil service. My first full-time job at 18, I was working as a civil servant, and I was working in an environment that was typically male-dominated, and I loved it. I really, really had the best career in that job. You know, there was nothing I could really complain about in terms of my career. Obviously, there's plenty of things I could complain about. But when I think back to my career that I had, that I started at that such a young age, I basically just grew up in that job. I left there when I was 39. So all of that time spent in a career, building, growing, climbing the ladder, you know, there's so much that I could talk about in terms of self-confidence and self-worth and really having to know your own worth, because I was up against, you know, every time I went for promotion, I would be up against my male counterparts who often had more experience than me, that had maybe more hours in the day to give because they weren't doing the school runs and the childcare that I was doing. And obviously having to take time out to go and have those children in the first place, and spending 2 years away out of the loop on when I had my kids and I was on maternity leave, which I don't regret for a second. And actually the civil service was amazing in terms of support and in terms of my maternity package, all of those things. Like, I cannot fault any of those things. But I think what I really want to talk about today is when that unraveled and when my confidence hit the floor. Yes, there was moments along my career where that would have happened. I could literally spend hours going through some of the examples where I was shamed, spoken to really badly, you know, the sexism, you know, the comments and stuff. But that's not actually what I want to talk about today. What I really, really want to talk about is the later stage, just before I left and before I ended up resigning, which was actually more of an inward battle, a battle with myself, my self-confidence and my inner critic. I was always quite confident. I have always been, my mum always says to me, I don't know how you're so confident. Like if I'd have had your confidence at your age, I would have literally been able to take over the world. And she's probably right. You know, she probably would have done way more had she had confidence. She always spoke about how she was always worried about what other people thought of her. And she would always get in her own head about things. She hated being a single parent because she hated showing up to things and having to like walk into rooms where she didn't know people. And that was something that she talked about a lot growing up. So I knew that, you know, my parents and my mum really, really saw me as like quite this confident person. And I have been. And it's really, really helped me to be kind of sociable, to show up to the things, to go for the promotions, to go for everything I want to go for. So here I am, 20 years into this career, and I have climbed that ladder. I have done it all. I am now on the senior leadership team and I loved it until I didn't. When I returned after having my second child, something changed. I had my children a little bit later. I had my first child at 34, which is not really that late to be fair, but in terms of fertility, we had to have IVF. And then I had my second child, my son, when I was 37. And after I went back, after having a year off with my son, like something about having two children and going back into a very senior role really, really messed with my head. I spent a lot of time thinking the world would be better if I just went and got a quiet little job. This idea of being able to sit and just quietly while away the hours, not really having to have the responsibility of whatever career that we have chosen for ourselves. And it feels appealing, right? I didn't really think for a moment that I was in perimenopause because I had just had a child. So in my mind, I was thinking, well, I'm still in childbearing age. Like, you know, we had IVF successfully. My periods are still regular. I wasn't thinking about anything to do with perimenopause. And I wish I had known that that was possible for me at that age, because it isn't actually that young when you're talking about perimenopause, because perimenopause can happen 10 years up to the time when your periods stop. And then that doesn't mean everything is over and that you no longer have any symptoms or anything. Actually, what happens is quite often women find that they are still experiencing symptoms post-menopause for many years. And it's not an exact thing that will affect people in different ways. You know, it will affect everybody differently. Everybody's journey from perimenopause through to post-menopause is different. The same way that all of our experiences, I've experienced going through IVF to have my children, and I have different experiences of my menstrual cycle. We're all gonna experience everything differently. No, there is no one size fits all. But for me, going through perimenopause age 38 and having no clue that I was even going through perimenopause because I felt too young really screwed me over. Massively screwed me over. Now, I can look back on it and say, oh, everything's meant to be, everything happens for a reason, and that I left that job and now I do things that are incredibly rewarding. I love running the businesses that I run. I run two businesses, if you don't know that. I am a coach, a menopause body image coach, and I also run a women's business club for the Southwest, which helps women to expand their network and grow their businesses. So I don't regret it in that sense, but I had worked so flipping hard and I had studied really, really hard. I got a lot of my qualifications that I maybe would have done if I'd have got at university. I got a lot of them on the job in the environment I was working with, because I had a really, really good employer and it was incredible. The opportunities that I had, I traveled, I lived in America for 3 years, and those opportunities came about because of the career that I was in. Now, leaving that career was never really on the cards. It wasn't something that I wanted to do. But because I hit this point of coming back to work post having my second child and probably going through some depression at the time that I didn't know about, and also layering on the symptoms of perimenopause, I was anxious, I was stressed, and I felt really, really worthless, and I was hitting burnout very, very quickly. there was, I could just see it now that I was just careering towards, very quickly towards a really, really extreme burnout. And I think I stepped out of it at the right time. I took a break, which ended up turning into a permanent resignation, but that's because I decided that that environment wasn't for me anymore. Now, I had so many people that would have said to me, no, no, you're doing brilliantly. There's nothing wrong with the work you're producing. You're amazing at what you do. We value you as part of this team. I had those people in my corner, but nothing that they said actually helped me to believe that for myself, because you can't necessarily just give someone a boost of confidence. It might happen temporarily, but actually what was going on in my head was this very noisy inner critic, this voice that was just telling me it was time to step away. I was no longer any good at this. I would be better off if I left the job. I had this reoccurring thought of being like, quote unquote, found out, of being like, they're going to find out that I'm crap at this job. And I wasn't crap at that job. I was really, really good at that job. But I felt like I was an imposter. I felt like I had lost all of my knowledge. I felt like everything had fallen out of my brain since I had my children. And I felt that that confidence was slipping and slipping. And the more that I thought about it, the worse it got. The more I was thinking about how to kind of upskill myself so I could get that confidence back, the worse it got. The more I shied away from things, the more I called in sick, the more often that I would hand over punchy projects and leading on particular projects to my male counterparts because I felt like I wasn't good enough. I felt like I didn't want to be visible. I didn't want to be in the rooms where I was answering all the questions, where I was, you know, feeling that heat. I didn't want to push myself out of my comfort zone. And that was the opposite of how I had been before I'd hit this sort of stage of my life. I was always putting myself in, you know, out of my comfort zone. I loved it and I love it again now, but I went through this period of really, really feeling anxious about myself. Self-doubt was utterly crippling. And like so many of us, I turned my attention to my body. And I talk about this a lot in terms of how we often feel that when things are out of control, we look for something that we can control. And because we're told that our body size and our weight is something, one, to be admired if we, you know, firstly, to be admired if we reach that thin goal. And secondly, it's something that we are told is fully within our control. All we have to do is eat right and move, you know, eat less, move more, blah, 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 all the advice that we get. And it's seen as this really big achievement and this thing that, you know, we think if we get our bodies under control, if we just lose enough weight, all of these things will fall into place. My relationship will improve. My confidence at work will improve. I will be nailing it in all of these different areas because I will be able to confidently show up and people will believe that I'm nailing it and they won't doubt me at all because I've got, you know, I've done what everybody's looking to do, right? I will have lost weight and I will have done the thing that everybody else seems to struggle with. And so my inner critic would be making me feel like crap and I would try and resolve that by dieting harder, working out harder, and pushing myself to that, you know, brink of exhaustion. And layered on top of that, I've got two young children under five at this point. I've got an extremely busy job. And even though I'm in a part-time role so that I can support my children, it is still pretty full on. And I'm sure there's so many of you out there who are working part-time hours, but actually essentially what we're doing, and we're often, I find this with women, is that we are trying to do a full-time role in our part-time hours, and we are trying to keep up with those who can start early, finish late, don't have to be home at a particular time, don't have a cutoff point, don't have somebody with, you know, who needs them in the house, who is going to rely on them to feed them, clothe them, pick them up from school, all of that stuff. So we're up against it. And, you know, this episode isn't actually, I don't want to dive into the equality issues necessarily, but those things are factors. When it comes to, you know, our self-confidence, I have never, ever heard my husband or any other man that I have worked with say to me, I really don't think I'm any good at this job. I think I'd be better off working in a supermarket. Not once. In fact, it's quite the opposite. And there's me thinking, gosh, am I good enough for this? Can I do this job? Am I qualified enough for this? You know, am I going to be doing enough hours to prove that I'm a serious career woman? all of this stuff spinning around in my head, and they don't have that at all. They don't have the same level of self-doubt. It's just unbelievable the difference between people I've worked with in the past. And maybe this is not your experience, but this is just how I've experienced it. The level of their confidence in comparison to mine after I became a mum was insane. It's just night and day. So when I came to do this talk that I was asked to do the other day about confidence, I really, really wanted to focus on the reason we don't feel confident. What is the difference between my male colleagues or my husband and me, and why I have this inner critic, and where does that come from? And I invited the women in that networking event to think about the things that their inner critic actually says, because I think in order to really address what's going on with our inner critic, we have to really get familiar with it. So we want to understand, what are the things that my inner critic will offer me on repeat? So many women that I know have a very body image centered inner critic. That's definitely my experience. My inner critic was always telling me that, well, if you were thinner, of course you'd be more confident in this situation. If you were thinner, people would want to work with you or promote you or whatever it might be, or be friends with you, whatever the situation is. It was always around whether I was thin enough or whether I was attractive enough. It was always about what I looked like, appearance-based kind of inner critic. And the key thing to remember about your inner critic is it's not you, it's not fact, it's not your voice, but often it sounds like your voice. So we often don't think it's our inner critic, we just take it as fact and we don't really actually acknowledge it. So part of the process of nailing that inner critic is firstly getting to know, what are the things that it says on repeat? Does it think my Achilles heel is? Because that's what it's using against me. That's what it's always going to offer you. And it's very repetitive. It's not going to ever be a positive thing. It's a critic, right? It's not a positive voice. And then they came up with things like, you aren't young enough, you aren't experienced enough, nobody's going to want to hear what you have to say. And I used the example when I was talking to these women that in the car on the way there, leading up to me doing this talk, my inner critic was wild. My inner critic was on fire, because I was giving it an opportunity. You know, I was in a situation where I was about to go and talk to women who I didn't know in a setting. I didn't know how many people were going to be there. I didn't know the venue. So my inner critic was trying to protect me. It was trying to pull me back and say, don't do this scary thing. Because my inner critic, my whole body was thinking, well, hang on, we're going to do something scary here. And I have learned to listen to it and kind of almost welcome it, really, and not be frightened of the things that it's saying. But there is no point where I think it's factual or it is my voice. I know for sure that it is not my voice. And that's the important distinction, because I have done this work. I have done this work for a long time. And it's really interesting how easy it is to separate yourself from it once you know how. So this is the first thing, is really understanding, what does your inner critic often offer you? And then the second thing to separate it from yourself is to say, like I was saying in the car, my inner critic is wild right now. It's separate from me. It's not saying, I'm really going to ruin this, I'm going to do the wrong thing, I'm going to mess this up. It's actually, those were the things my inner critic was saying. I was able to remind myself that I am, one, safe, and two, not going to mess this up. And three, if I do mess it up, nothing's going to happen to me. I'm not going to get eaten by a lion because I didn't do the talk correctly. That's how I was able to still walk into that room confident and deliver the talk, because I wasn't allowing my inner critic to become factual. And then I asked them to do an exercise, which I run through with my clients, which was to really listen to the sound of that inner critic in the voice of which it comes. So quite often there was people in the room that were saying that their inner critic sounded like their own mum. That's very common. If you have a parent who has been critical of you, even if it's just a few times over your childhood or even into adulthood, their voice can become your inner critic. And, you know, many of people were saying it was the sound of their boss or an ex-boyfriend or whatever it might be. And really giving your inner critic another person's voice, I think, is another great way of separating it from you, so it doesn't sound like your own. It's really, really important to recognize who it is and then think about why that person has been, you know, when and why that person has been critical of you. And think about the examples that you have. So many of my clients and many women in the room that I was in on that evening were talking about their mothers being very critical of themselves, and actually they'd internalized that as them, what is expected of them. So let's suggest that their own mother was criticizing their own body. They know that it's, you know, if their mothers are saying things like, oh, I hate my thighs, or I wish my thighs were thinner, or I need to go on a diet, they're getting the message that fat is bad and your body needs to look perfect and your body should be something that you control and keep in check. So that's like a perfect example of how body image based inner critics come to be. They come from things we have experienced in the past and things we have listened to and things we have heard. Now, it might not be all coming from that one person in your life. In fact, I'd be really surprised if it was, because other things like that reinforce this in society, when we listen to, we see the media, we see films, and we see the leads as always being thin, attractive women. We still don't typically see different body sizes and diversity on our screens. And that sends a very subconscious message that that's not what we want to achieve. The successful people in life are thin, attractive, stay looking young, look incredible against our beauty standards. So it's not coming from one person, but it is really, really important to recognize where your inner critic is showing up and why. So we did a bit of time getting familiar with that. And then they had it separated in their mind. And then we did a really, really good exercise, which I really, really love doing with my clients. And I got them to imagine that they had a stereo and it was blaring out this really loud inner critical voice that is on repeat telling them all the things that they need to do differently, they need to be better, or, you know, all of this stuff. And I got them to visualize this stereo, but one of the women in the group actually said that she didn't see the stereo. She saw her mum standing there, which I thought was really powerful and so interesting that her mum had such an impact on the voice in her head that was telling her that she wasn't good enough, that she couldn't even see the stereo. She actually saw her mum stood there mad at her and telling her not to do something or telling her to be better or whatever it was. What I got them to do was imagine the stereo or this person, and the voice was getting louder and that it was actually really, really deafening. And they turned it up until it was really, really uncomfortable. And then bit by bit, we spent some time turning that down and really feeling and absorbing that silence when the inner critic is turned off, showing that you can be in control of that voice, that you don't have to just let it chunder on repeat. You can actually be in control of the volume, of the pace, and what it is saying to the point where you can turn it off. And that's so powerful. Being able to control that and seeing it as something that is separate to you is amazing. And then what we wrap that up by spending a bit of time asking our inner critic what they want to keep us safe from, because our inner critic is really, really just there to stop you from making mistakes, to stop you from embarrassing yourself, to stop you from, you know, my inner critic on the way to that event was simply just trying to stop me from doing the scary thing. But what is important is that I'm able to go back to my inner critic, separate it from myself, and go back and say to it, it's okay, I'm safe. I'm safe to do this scary thing, because this scary thing isn't actually that scary. It's actually very low stakes, and I really want to do it because I'm going to enjoy it and the benefits outweigh what could go wrong. But knowing that my inner critic is just trying to keep me safe helps me to really diffuse it and just step away from it and not allow it to drive the bus. I do not want to be making decisions in my life based on what my inner critic is telling me to do, because then I will never achieve anything and I will keep my world very, very small. And I think in perimenopause or wherever you are on your menopause journey, because of the decline of hormones, we find ourselves feeling quite anxious and quite unsure of ourselves again. Maybe like me, you were confident before and then suddenly your confidence disappears and you think, gosh, I used to be this vibrant, confident woman. Like, what's happened to me? You can get that back because you can start to work with it, and really knowing that you're in perimenopause actually really helps, because you can recognize that this is probably just a decline of your hormones that's making you feel this way. It's not because anything has changed or anything has happened. You know, I had not lost all of my knowledge when I was in that job. I'd been there 20 years. If anything, I had too much knowledge. I felt like I needed to retrain, start from scratch, get demoted. All of those things kept coming up. That's not true. But my hormones were in such a place of flux and decline that I didn't realize that that was impacting my self-confidence and my self-worth. And had I have had some of these tools that I have now, where I can understand my inner critic is something separate from me, that I can work on my own self-confidence and my own self-worth consistently, would I have left that job? Would I have been in a different position? Would I still be there now? And would I have been back to my confident self? Who knows? And I will never know. But it's really interesting to be able to control how we react to these things and how it dictates our life. We do not want a life that becomes so small because we are too scared to venture out of our comfort zone. And for me, that's the most important thing, that my clients can see that it's okay to grow regardless of where you are. You do not have to take your foot off the gas because you are in perimenopause. I needed to take a break. Absolutely, I needed to take a break, no doubt. And I was lucky to be able to do that. And I'm not suggesting that we continue to work and work and work until we burn out. But actually, I would have had the confidence to maybe take some time off of work, take some time out, do some self-development, do some inner work. And then I maybe have been able to come back to that fresh and been able to communicate what I needed from my workplace better than I literally just left. I just could not see a way out. And my only way out was just to go and to just take that time off. And actually, I don't think in hindsight, that was the best move. I think it could have, the outcome could have been so different had I been able to really understand all of the things that were happening for me at that time. That's really what I wanted to share with you, is just if you're feeling really, really unconfident and feeling like you've really lost yourself, work with somebody and spend time figuring out where that's coming from. And, you know, recognizing that this is probably a perimenopause thing, because if you're listening to this, I'm going to guess that you are probably even, you know, slightly curious that you might be in that stage, or you know that you are and you are fully into it. But knowing that if you struggle with this stuff, you can work on it. There are so many tools. You know, I've given you an example of one of the ones I use with my clients, but there are so many ways that we can challenge what we're thinking and know that that is not factual. You are not broken. You are not unworthy. There are so many things that you can do to help boost your confidence beyond someone telling you to just be more confident, which is technically very useless at this point. Don't be afraid to go and do the work. This is where the magic happens, right? Taking the action and actually doing the work is where the magic happens. I am constantly growing and working with coaches and different people. You'll see from my stories, I've been working with a stylist, I've been working with a coach, I've always got a PT. I use different PTs depending on what my goals are at that time. And none of them need to be weight loss ever at all. But working on things that make me a better person and expand my world and expand my life is so important to me because I've seen the benefits. I know that it's uncomfortable sometimes to do the work. I can't tell you how much like therapy, coaching, working with mentors, all of the stuff in different areas can be very, very uncomfortable. It can open up things that I think, oh my gosh, like I have not got time to really process this right now. But I know that on the other side of doing that work is going to be a version of me that I love even more and that I can give more to the world because I am working on myself. And I always work with professionals who are also working on themselves and expanding and growing, because I do not like working with people who don't want to do that and get into that stuff. I think professional, if you're working with a professional, ask them who they're in a coaching program with, find out who's their mentor, because if they haven't got one and they believe that they know everything and they're completely cured and healed and they have life completely wrapped up in a nice pretty bow, I can promise you they don't. And that would be a red flag for me. So don't be afraid of doing the work and don't be afraid of working with people who are also doing some work on themselves, because it's so, so important. Right, I'm going to leave you there. And I will see you next week. I have a guest coming up. I have lots of guests lined up for you. I'm hoping next week to bring you my very, very first guest. I will reveal all on social media once I know whether that is going to be the next episode or not. But yeah, it's very, very exciting to be having people on the pod that I can talk to, because it's just me, right? Just me and the mic. And sometimes it feels nice to bounce a conversation off somebody else and get some other experts on that can offer you some incredible things to help you through your menopause journey. I will see you next week on the Undiet Your Menopause podcast. See you soon. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Undiet Your Menopause podcast. Join me next week for another chat about menopause, breaking free from food rules, body shame, and society's expectations. And if you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to rate and review. It takes less than a minute, but it truly helps the algorithm gods find more people who need this podcast in their life. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode, then follow or subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. I'd love to stay connected to each and every one of you. And as a little thank you from me to you, I've put a link in the show notes that will give you access to my free unapologetic guide to undieting your life. It's packed full of ways you can have a better relationship with food, get started with intuitive eating, and love and accept your body exactly as it is without shrinking. You can follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, or find out more about how to work with me on my website, www.tamsinbroster.co.uk. Everything you need is in the show notes. I will see you next time on the Undiet Your Menopause podcast.